Hey, I'm Vermont Edition producer Daniela Fierro. The podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Today is the third installment in our series, School Stories. Every Tuesday for the month of September, we are focusing on issues related to Vermont's elementary, middle, and high schools. This week, phones in school. It's an issue we have heard is important to you. One listener wrote in to ask if there's been any traction at local schools in banning cell phones. Quote, as a middle school educator, I fail to see the benefit of adolescents needing their cell phones during school hours. Today, we'll talk with a pediatrician, state lawmaker, school administrator, education reporter, and of course, take your calls. But first, since we're talking about an issue that directly affects kids, let's kick off today's conversation by hearing from the students themselves. I recently visited Williston Central School and sat down with a group of 7th and 8th graders. They're all 12 or 13 years old. They started out by talking about when they first got their own phones. Here's Ella, Sunny, Ryan, Catherine, Evan, and Olivia.
I was 11.
I was 11, but I shared one with my brother until I was 12.
I think I was in 5th grade, maybe. It was like an iPhone 6, my mom's old phone, and I just had it for games, or like to call my mom after soccer or something.
Well, I had one like last year, but then it like broke. I've had an iPad.
Okay.
And I'm getting one for my 13th birthday because my parents don't want me to have one until I'm a teenager.
I got my first phone when I turned 12, my birthday.
Yeah, do your parents all like try to contact you on the phone? Is that like a tool for them to help know where you are?
Yeah.
They text me very frequently.
Yeah. When you go to school, are there rules about when you can and can't use your phones?
No phones.
At all?
No phones during the school day. They say when
there's some exceptions.
Once you walk in the door, you have to put it away. But, like, our teacher, and I know most teachers, like, if you have to, like, send yourself pictures for a project or something, they'll let you use it for, like, 5 minutes.
Are there kids who will use phones when they're not supposed to? Does that happen a lot?
Yes.
Yeah.
Kids will have them in the pockets during the day and they'll just take them out.
Yeah, especially in world language, because they'll go into the bathrooms that are in the hallway and they'll just go on their phones for like 30 seconds.
When teachers catch you on your phone, what happens?
Last year, we were in the locker room before a soccer game and someone had their phone. It was on Friday, and the teachers took their phone till the next school day, so they had it till Monday.
Last year, they would give you a couple of reminders, and then tell you to put, and then they would take it and put it in the lockbox. But this year, they changed it. If they see your phone in your pocket, or you using it without permission, then they just put it right in the lockbox.
They're gonna like walk you to the lockbox and like watch you put it in the lockbox, and you're like, make sure it's in the lockbox.
Yeah, they really don't want us to have it in our backpacks, so they want us to like put it in the box and then not until the end of the day.
Yeah. Do you all have rules at home about when you can use phones or like other
The rules keep changing for our household. My mom tried a system where at night she would put it away, but I had trouble sleeping, and my brothers, like, we all like, listen to stuff when we sleep, if it's the audiobook, or I listen to, like, white noise or something. And then they tried, like, a not past 7 thing, but it just, like, never works out, and yeah.
Yeah.
We have the screen time limit. It, like, blocks it after a certain time, so, like, for me, it's after 9 o'clock. I can't use anything.
I usually don't really use my phone at home too much, but, I plug it in before I go to bed, and I don't use it at night.
Are there times when you find yourself like really wanting to check your phone, and why is that? So are you nodding? Like, what are you wanting to do when you want to look at your phone?
For me, it's mostly like if my friends and I are like talking during school, and like, hey, do you want to come over? I feel like it'd just be a lot easier to like call my dad real quick or something and be like, hey, can I hang out? Versus like sending an email and then like waiting for a time in class when I can check my email, and then it's like a whole thing.
For me, it's because like a lot of my friends, they have phones and they bring it to school. And so sometimes they'll like text each other, or they'll like take pictures and like send each other videos. And they'll send it to like group chats that like I'm in, but then I have to wait till like the end of the day to see it.
I really like to listen to music and focus. I can't focus or sleep with like anything if there's noise, so that's why I like the music, but yeah.
Yeah.
Can't do that without a phone. They block Spotify and all, like all the other music apps. Like there's restricted websites on our Chromebooks.
Something that also I wish I could use my phone for is like I'm not the best at spelling. So sometimes if I'm like writing something and I'm like, darn, I'm like, I wish I could Google how to spell that.
Yeah.
I like know it's wrong, but I don't know how to spell it.
There's times when like I'm at home and I really want to put my phone down and go to bed and I like literally can't. I just like am on Instagram for another hour and I'm like, I cannot stop doing this. Do you ever feel like that?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just hard for me to put it down sometimes.
I'll get distracted. I'll like have something to do on my phone. I'll be like, okay, I'm gonna do this, put my phone away. But then I look at my text, I look at like in like social media, and I get really distracted really easily. So it's like a habit. It's like a habit to go right back on my phone.
I feel like if I didn't have screen time limits at all on my phone, it would be pretty difficult.
I will like be watching something and I'm like, okay, this is the last video, and then I'm like, I wasn't satisfied or something, and then I like just kind of keep going, and then I like get zoned out, and then I'm like, oh geez, I've like been watching something for like an hour, and then I like wish I could do something else. My brain needs to have like a reason to do it. I can't just put it down. I try to work on that. That's not, I mean.
That's a really good way to put it. I feel like that too sometimes. How about you? Do you ever have that feeling?
No, I usually, I'm not really on my phone much unless I'm just calling my friends. If I need to put it down, I'll just turn off notifications and just put it down.
Do you feel like the rules that are in place in your life around phones, do they feel like the right rules?
At least my parents like grew up not having phones. Like they don't really understand like the importantness, I guess, of like when I hear the group chat like binging, I want to see that and like I want to be part of that. And when they're like, oh well, you've already been texting for like an hour, and I'm like, okay, but the conversation is still happening and I want to be a part of that.
My parents are kind of outdated, and they used like landlines when they were our age to communicate, and their parents would be like, oh, I have to call the doctor, so you have to get off that. And that's kind of how they would regulate talking to their friends. So they don't really understand how like conversations can stop and then pick right back up again.
Even if it's not a group chat, I can be talking to like five people at once. Like one of them's asking about schoolwork, and one of them's like asking me about something else, and there's a lot going on.
I sometimes wish like my phone had like a hard stop. So like even if I'm trying to like trick myself into like still watching something, then it can be like a stop, and then I'll be like, okay, time to do something else.
Procrastination is really hard for me.
Same.
If like I start the day on my phone, I feel like I don't start the day off well. I start the day off distracted and not good. I feel like I need to no phone in the morning.
Sometimes I'll be on it for like 20 minutes and then they'll be like, what are you doing? And just say like, I'm just playing games, and they'd say, all right, well, it's time to get off soon. And then the video games that I play on there, they're like online, so you can't get up and go do something.
Yeah. And then lastly, I'm curious if your parents or caregivers or older siblings, if you have them in your life, are like good models for you for how to use their phones.
My dad, he likes to play, or if he gets up early to go to work, he likes up at 4 a.m., gets back for work maybe at 4 p.m. or something like that, and then he'll just like take a break from his day and get on a, FIFA is a game he likes to play, so we play on that, he does that. My mom will scroll on Facebook and talk to her colleagues about stuff, but mainly she's on her computer for work. So,
Are you laughing because of Facebook?
Yeah. The Facebook. But mainly it's like for work. Both my brothers are on their phones just as much as me, and I have a younger one and an older one. But another thing I really enjoy is when like we can put our phones down and like watch a movie together.
What about you?
I feel like my dad is a bit better. He works at a lumberyard. He's the only one there, so it's a lot of work. And sometimes he'll come home and watch like surfing videos for like 15 minutes, and then he'll cook dinner. But he's not on his phone very much.
I definitely think my parents are good role models. Like, I like will sometimes be like scrolling on like Snapchat or whatever, and be like I wish I could like, I wish it was like easier to just like put it down. Like, I used to be mad at my dad because I'd be like, well, you won't let me use my phone, but, like, you're on yours. And then I, like, I realize that, like, he has a job, and like, his makes him, like, be on his computer and phone a lot, and, like, I've, like, realized that he's not, like, just, like, scrolling or whatever.
What do you think?
I think my mom is, she's not really on her phone that much except for work. My dad, he, well, when we're watching a movie, he is, you know, on his phone, or when we go outside to play. If somebody's calling him, he can't, but he has to pick it up.
Yeah.
My sister's 15, and she is on her phone a lot.
I think my mom is pretty decent at it because she likes to do a lot of other things. Like, she likes to knit. She likes to do puzzles a lot. And she doesn't have, like, the kind of work that she's on a screen all day.
My family, after, like, that 6 o'clock period, we're all just exhausted. And, like, so my dad might go on the game. My mom might finish grading papers and look at Facebook or text people, like her friends. And then my brothers might do their own thing and I might do mine.
Yeah.
I also have, like, a younger brother. He gets sucked into those, like, video games, like those mindless video games. Mm-hmm. And he'll just sit on them for, like, hours and hours. It's, like, kind of crazy. He, like, won't move.
I think the reason it's hard for me to, like, stop with my screens is because I'm, like, really busy brain. Like, my brain goes so fast and it's, like, hard to, like, slow it down and stop it. So I think, like, subconsciously when I don't have to do the thinking, it feels a lot better than, like, my brain going overtime all the time.
That was my conversation with a group of 7th and 8th graders at Williston Central School. Now, here with me to continue the conversation is Allison Novak. She's an education reporter for 7 Days. And earlier this month, she wrote a cover story for the paper about Vermont schools that are banning smartphones to limit distractions. Allison, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And we're also joined by Dr. Heidi Schumacher. She's a pediatrician at the University of Vermont, and she serves on the American Academy of Pediatrics Council on School Health. Dr. Schumacher, welcome.
Thank you so much.
So I'd love to just hear your thoughts listening to those students that we heard just now. They brought up a lot. Allison, what did it trigger for you?
So one of the things that stuck out to me is this idea of teachers having to police phones. So even in schools where, you know, kids are supposed to have their phones away, what I have heard is that a lot of time it, you know, is left up to the teacher to kind of to enforce that. And so in this case, you know, you have teachers who are kind of supposed to be there to teach, but instead are, you know, busy making sure kids aren't on their phones. And so I think that speaks to why some districts and some schools are putting more restrictive policies in place around cell phone use.
Mm. And we'll get into some of the ways in which they're actually keeping kids physically away from their phones just a little bit this hour. Dr. Schumacher, first thoughts from you.
I think the thing that struck me the most is how several young people brought up the universality of social media and phones in our lives. I think a couple brought up parents and younger siblings. I certainly think about that a lot in my own life. My mother, who's 75, and my 2-year-old daughter and family members at all ages in between all experience social media in different ways. It's present in our lives all the time, and sort of we may just have different experiences in the platforms we use, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, so for both of you, I'm sure, Allison, since this article came out, that you've had people reaching out to you saying, I've been trying to deal with this exact same issue in my household, perhaps looking for advice. Dr. Schumacher, I bet you get lots of questions from parents in your own practice. How much of a challenge is it for families who might want to put in place one type of restriction, but then at school there's a totally different set of rules? Or do you feel like there's starting to be a consensus about what's healthy for kids in terms of phone usage, Allison?
Well, it's interesting because in some of the reporting I did, it actually seems like parents are often part of the problem with phone use in schools. There were a number of administrators who told me that parents often text their children during the day and expect a response, or even that if a child gets upset in school, their first reaction is not to kind of troubleshoot and figure out how to deal with being upset, but to text their parents to tell them that they're upset. And so, you know, it's made me think as a parent of teenagers, it's made me kind of pause when I want to just ask my daughter, who's 17, a quick question at school to think, yeah, I don't want to be part of the problem. And so I think, you know, there are norms around kind of how we communicate with our children that maybe have to change if we want to have phone-free school environments.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah. And we heard that from one of the students who said she'd like to be able to just reach out to her dad to schedule a play date with her friends and doesn't want to have to wait to get an email back from him. But as a society, we're not used to that waiting period anymore.
It's true, yeah.
And Dr. Schumacher, what kinds of questions are you getting from parents who are looking for guidance on this sort of thing?
Lots of questions, I think, show up in the healthcare space. Yeah. And we're actually doing work at UVM to engage primary care practices all across the state exactly in how you might approach this kind of conversation in a healthcare setting. I think my reaction is we want to empower families, answer families and caregivers' questions, but we're really trying to be sensitive to not make the parent or caregiver be the police person who's the one, say, you walk in the door, put down your phone, put down your phone, put down your phone. We know parents are experiencing a lot of stress with this too. And as was noted, many adults also struggle with social media boundaries. So I think what we are trying to really reinforce with primary care teams is to really wonder with the child, young person, and family, what is this experience like? How can we build sort of joint reflections and really build skills so that young person has tools to navigate their social media use?
Mm, I need those skills too. Whenever you figure them out and write them down, I'll take them. JD writes, this year we went to a phone-free day at the high school where I teach. It's been wonderful. Students lock their phones in a pouch at the beginning of the day and they are unlocked at the end of the day when they leave the building. While I used to feel that students could manage their phones responsibly, and some of them can, there was a critical mass who could not. What I especially like is that students are taking more time or are talking more to each other since they can't jump on their phones whenever there is any downtime. Allison, let's talk a little bit more about the ways in which schools are separating kids from their phones. We heard from the students in Williston that there are lock boxes that they have to put their phones into. What are some of the other methods that you found?
So I was particularly interested in kind of policies or guidelines that really were more restrictive, that really separated kids from their phones. And so I found two schools. One is Harwood Union Middle and High School in Duxbury, and the other is Thetford Academy in Thetford Center. And those schools are the two high schools that I know of in Vermont that are using Yonder pouches. So those are these cloth pouches. They have a magnetic lock. And at the beginning of the day, students put all their devices, so phones, earbuds, smartwatches, into the pouch, lock it. They can keep it with them. And then at the end of the day, there are like these magnetic docks where they can unlock their phone. And so, you know, it's too early, I think, to say how these new restrictions are going to work out. But after the first week of school, I did talk to administrators who said, so far, so good. Things had been working well. And just like that caller, JD, a teacher probably at one of those schools, said, you know, they were saying, we hear a lot more conversation in the hallways. There's kids who are checking out books that didn't used to check out books because they need something now to do during their downtime. And so they're reading more. And so I want to follow up in a couple months to see, you know, how these policies are rolled out. But so far, so good, it sounds like, yeah, from the schools.
Have you heard of any kids outsmarting the Yonder pouch, buying a magnet?
It was funny, yeah. I mean, when I was reporting, that came up a lot, that like it's pretty easy to find this $10, $20 magnet on Amazon you can purchase that will unlock the Yonder pouch. But I think part of it, too, is that like the schools that are doing this are not just saying, here are the rules, and this is, you know, you have to do this. They're trying to get buy-in from students. And so part of this has been discussions, especially at Harwood, discussions with students last spring about why they were doing this, to really get a sense not of whether students wanted it or not, because it was kind of already a foregone conclusion, but just, you know, what students were worried about, what the school should keep in mind to help make things easier for students, and really hear like what their concerns were.
Yeah. And as you've mentioned, Allison, you found that in your reporting, this is really at a school by school level right now. Each school has the choice to figure out how they're going to police this. And sometimes individual classrooms as well have different policies than a classroom down the hall. And it is the work right now of school administrators, parents, teachers to come up with these policies. Dr. Schumacher, I wonder if you might have any advice for folks who might be invited to be part of one of these conversations or help their community figure out what type of phone policy they want their school to have. What are some good first steps?
I love that. Thank you for that. I mean, I love the idea, Allison. I'm inspired by the story that you just told of young people's voices being engaged, families' voices being engaged, educators, administrators, other community members, pediatricians, school nurses. Lots of folks, I think, have a vested interest in young people's health and well-being. So I think first, leverage community. This is one of the strengths of Vermont is we have such strong community partnerships. And so leveraging folks who might be able to come express an educated opinion or at least a passionate opinion about what the issues are that you're solving for, I think that's an important thing. Are we solving for distraction? Are we solving for bullying? Is there something else that's unique to the community that might be playing in that has a say in what the policy might look like? And then I think figuring out how are those various community groups, stakeholders, going to be engaged throughout the process of not only designing a policy, but implementing it and sort of understanding over time whether it's been successful.
Mm. Okay, those are really helpful. And speaking of like where these conversations start at the family level, community, school, state. There are, I think, at least 8 states, correct me if I'm wrong here, Allison, that have restricted phone usage in schools, as well as some big cities like New York City. And Vermont did consider this during the last legislative session. What happened to that bill?
Yeah, so there was a bill last legislative session that was discussed in the Senate Education Committee, and I think actually voted out of Senate Ed, but it ended up kind of fizzling. That bill would have banned all cell phones in schools, and it also had a provision that would have allowed families to opt out of all technology in schools. And so when I talk to people about that bill, I think that section of the bill, the kind of opting out of technology, was a non-starter for a lot of people, especially the Vermont NEA, the teachers union, who basically said, you know, if kids were allowed to opt out of technology, then teachers might have to like plan, you know, multiple versions of lessons in order to, you know, meet each kid where they were at. And it felt like that was a little bit too far for some people to go. But there are plans to introduce a new bill this session. I know your Angela Arsenault is going to be on the show, and she is the legislator who I think is really spearheading that effort.
Well, thank you. You set us up perfectly for our next guest. Let's bring in one more voice here. State Representative Angela Arsenault is a Democrat representing Williston in the Vermont House. She's also a parent of 2 teens in the Champlain Valley School District, so she knows this conversation very well. Representative Arsenault, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Michaela. Thank you for having me.
So you have said that you want to introduce some slightly different legislation than what we've been talking about in this next legislative session. What is the current shape of this legislation as it takes form?
Yeah, I'm interested in I will be introducing a bill that is a little more narrowly focused than S-284, which did pass out of Senate Education last year, but in a very different form than it was introduced. But the bill that I intend to introduce would focus on requiring every school, every district or supervisory union or independent school in Vermont to adopt a phone-free policy. And ideally, as introduced, it will stipulate that be what's called a bell-to-bell policy, meaning that phones are away from, you know, the arrival bell to dismissal. And then a second stipulation in the bill would touch on social media and specifically prohibiting schools from communicating directly with students via social media, because that's just opening up a portal that we know is not safe for kids. So it really makes no sense for schools to be relying on something like that.
And there, just an example of that, there might be like a sports team, for example, that the coach asked them to be part of a group.
Maybe a Snapchat group. Yeah. My son, who's a freshman at CVU this year, he's on the cross country team. And they asked, or they said, you know, follow us on Instagram, you know, CVU cross country. So I don't know if that's exactly what Angela's bill would get at, but I just found it interesting that, you know, social media is so woven into the fabric of our lives that sometimes I think there's not a lot of thought given to those things. But especially for, you know, kids who might not even be on social media, you could imagine it might make them feel weird and maybe put families in an odd position when, you know, their team has an Instagram account that they want to follow.
Mm. And Representative Arsenault, right. Why do you think this is an important issue to legislate on the state level rather than having communities figure it out ad hoc as they're doing now?
Well, a couple of reasons. I think first and foremost, it provides real, not just equity, but equality in our districts. A lot of research has shown that these bans, if they are implemented, are often done in schools that are in districts that are, you know, better resourced. And I just don't think it would be right for us to leave this decision to schools and administrators to figure out on their own. Another reason is that it essentially, I really believe that every student in Vermont deserves the same protection. And doing that at the state level also alleviates that burden for administrators. We know that administrators and school staff and school boards, frankly, I'm also on our school board, and we deal with a lot, and we have a lot coming up to deal with this year with our budget season again. So I really think that this sort of decision made at the state level can benefits everyone and really sets a standard for the level of protection that we believe our students need and deserve from these harmful products. That's the thing. We're talking about addiction. It's not, and distraction. And, it's just hard to understand, frankly, why we wouldn't ban phones in schools when there is nothing that shows us that they help students or that they provide a benefit in the educational environment.
State Rep. Angela Arsenault, a Democrat representing Williston in the House. Thank you so much for calling in today.
Thank you.
And Representative Arsenault brought up this idea of social media in particular being addictive. And I just want to note here that several states, including Vermont, have sued Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, alleging that the company is essentially knowingly creating addictive products with detrimental effects on adolescents. Help us understand this, Dr. Schumacher. We've all felt that addictive pull of social media. What exactly is happening that has caused us to start using this very serious term, addiction?
So I think we've all experienced some level of difficulty coming off of social media when we're on it. And we have to remember that young people's brains, based on how they develop in their, especially in the teenage adolescent years, may be more primed for that kind of challenge getting off of social media. I think the truth is that there are features that are inherent and intentional in these products that make it hard to come off. Things like infinite scroll, things like notifications that ping you when you move to a different platform, say. And again, we know young people's brains are particularly susceptible to those. So I think one of the things we've talked a lot about in the pediatric community is how, regardless of what a policy might be in a school or a community, how can we help build awareness, build skills for young people and their families in using some of the tools that already exist to help limit the impact maybe of some of those features. But also, how do we raise our voices and advocate to some of these device or platform leadership? And I know that's what the Surgeon General's done too, to really make some of these products safer in the first place. Mm.
What you're saying about those tools reminds me of an email that we received earlier from a listener named Megan, who, where is it? There it is. Megan writes, I have adult children who grew up in the school system without phones, and I really feel for parents today. When I listened to the middle schoolers earlier in this hour talking about their phone use, I noticed one of the girls said her brain is on overdrive, and this is one way to block it out and be more in the moment or relax. Are schools thinking about how to teach children about meditation, calming techniques, mindfulness as an alternative to social media and phone use? Dr. Schumacher.
I can't say exactly how each school might be approaching that, but I do think it's a great opportunity for partnership with healthcare folks, both in the school and out of the community. I worked in schools for a long time as a health officer in another jurisdiction, and I feel for my colleagues in schools, right? We drop, in many cases, the woes of the bigger society on the front steps of schools, and we can't expect schools to grapple with this alone. I do think there's opportunity for all of us to think about ways we can support young people in building skills, learning about some of these tools, and as you note, leveraging social emotional learning in the bigger picture of how we're helping young people be active, engaged, good citizens in the world, both on their phones and off. Hmm.
We also received a question from a listener named Shannon in Warren who writes, I'm curious about what schools are doing about smartwatches like the Apple Watch that allow phone-like applications. Allison, did this come up in your reporting for 7 days?
It did. A lot of the administrators I talked to said in the last couple years, really, smartwatches have also become a big problem, especially for elementary school kids. And so I think, you know, again, I think it varies from classroom to classroom. I know in the schools where they have the Yonder pouches, the smartwatches are expected to be put in the pouches along with the phones. There is also a way to turn the phone on school mode, watches on school mode, so that you don't get notifications, but I don't know, that feels like a bit of a slippery slope, or, you know, it would be easy for a kid just to say they did and, you know, didn't really do it. So, but I do think that smartwatches are becoming almost as much of a problem sometimes as phones are. Mm.
And we posed this question about should phones be allowed in schools on Vermont Public's Instagram, and we got a lot of responses. I just want to read a couple of them here. One person wrote, yes, kids need to learn how to use them appropriately and have self-control with tech. Another person also agrees that smartphones should be allowed in schools, including for diabetics, because if they have a Dexcom, it's going to be on their phone. Other people disagree and say, absolutely not. So many of us grew up without cell phones or didn't have them until we could drive. Many people call for certain limitations, and a few people brought up concerns about school shootings and safety in schools. One person writes, until school shootings are stopped, my high schooler will have her cell phone on her. Dr. Schumacher, how much is this a part of the conversation when we talk about phones?
I so appreciate that. I mean, certainly the issues of technology for kids with disabilities and for kids with certain health conditions is critical. I think it's another reason why engaging, say, a school nurse or a pediatrician or family practice doc in the creation of policies, no matter what they look like, is critical. I think the other comments speak to the necessity to engage all members of the community, right? I've heard from so many parents this issue of, just as recently as last week with the school shooting in Georgia, how could it possibly be that I wouldn't be able to reach my young person if that mm-hmm. happened in my kid's school? And then you have school safety officers say, if there's a school shooting, the last thing that we want is a million cell phones going off. So I think supporting all parties to understand what some of the challenges might be and what alternative solutions could be to solve that challenge is critical. Mm.
We got an email just now from Nora, who writes, students of any age do not need phones in schools. Besides the obvious reasons, it'll force students to interact with one another, form friendships, and build a social network that might last a lifetime. It'll improve their focus. Phones are a distraction for all. They have their place, but not in schools. I also wanted to note there a message that we received on Instagram earlier today. One person there wrote to us and said, I work in a middle school. Phones were allowed last year, and it was a nightmare. We went device-free this year, and it has made a huge difference in behaviors. Well, sometimes it can be helpful to hear an example of what is going on outside of the great state of Vermont. At North Country School in Lake Placid, New York, phones have never been allowed on campus. It's a boarding and day school for grades 4 to 9. Todd Ormiston is the school's executive director. He's worked at a number of independent schools in our region over his career, including Vermont Academy and Stratton Mountain School. Todd, thanks for calling in.
Good afternoon, Michaela. Thanks so much for having me.
So tell us, what is North Country School's phone policy?
Well, so we're, as you mentioned, a day and boarding school here in Lake Placid, New York. We're it's grades 4 to 9. And of course, with our day students, they head home in the late afternoon, and they are able to use the device that is appropriate for their family choice at night. But here on campus, we have about 60 boarding students. And other than two spots in on Wednesdays and Fridays for only for our ninth graders, none of our boarding students have access to their cell phones. With our ninth graders, they can access it for about 45 minutes twice a week, acknowledging that most of our boarding students are going to go on from North Country School to another school where they probably will have access to their phones. So we're not closed-minded about the fact that they exist and that kids need to develop good behavior and sort of a thoughtful approach to use. But here we haven't found and intentional use for phones in the experience of being here in such a beautiful place in a wonderful school.
Mm. So as we were talking about on this program earlier, many parents have grown very used to being able to contact their children whenever they want throughout the day. And I imagine this urge could be even stronger if your kid is at a boarding school and you don't get to see them every day. Is this phone policy hard on some parents?
Yeah, we're talking a lot about phones and children, but phones and children and the impact on the parents of not being immediately accessible is challenging. We have students from around the world, and there is a period of time, we're in it right now as school just started recently, where parents are starting to understand what it feels like to let go. And as uncomfortable as that can be for our parents, they eventually understand the benefits that their children have, that the conversations that they are having with their parents are thoughtful and deliberate about what's going on in their lives, not as one of the earlier guests mentioned, trying to solve an immediate problem that they're having in a moment.
Mm. As you mentioned, Todd, phones and social media are a pretty inevitable part of modern life at this point. How exactly are you preparing kids to enter that world in high school once they go on from grade 9 at North Country into grade 10 somewhere else?
Right. Well, we would like to believe that the vast majority of communication that we as human beings are having is person to person. And it's probably the most meaningful and valuable in terms of developing relationships and being impactful in the world. So we don't feel like we're taking anything away from children by not letting them communicate through a device, but we're giving them all the tools so that they can be fully functioning as community members. So we understand that when children go home for vacations or if they're home for the summer, of course, they're going to be on their devices if the families are supportive of that. But what we're doing is creating a conversation around the use of it so that children are aware that they have a choice and that they're not dependent on it and that their lives can be fuller if they're not staring at a screen and watching TikTok videos or texting a friend that's, 15 feet away from them.
Mm. Todd, do you think that this type of policy could be replicated at a school that is very different from yours, perhaps a larger school or a traditional public school?
Well, as we've heard for the past 45 or 50 minutes from our guests, and definitely I really enjoyed hearing from the students in Williston, it is complex. It's not cut and dry. There are, as someone mentioned, health concerns with different things and accessibility. So it really has to start with the engagement of, as one of the guests mentioned, what problem are we solving? And I think that the Vermont State Legislature and the government is intervening appropriately, and I can't speak to exactly the details of this, but it does have to be part of a larger conversation, and it can't be just dependent on one school administrator to exact a policy, because then it becomes about that one administrator.
Mm. Todd Ormiston, thank you so much for joining our conversation. Todd is calling in from the North Country School in Lake Placid, New York, where I know a number of Vermonters go, right, Todd?
Absolutely. We have quite a few that come across the lake, and we enjoy being part of the community.
All right, well, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Our guests in the studio today are 7 Days Education reporter Allison Novak and pediatrician Dr. Heidi Schumacher. So earlier in this conversation, Allison, we were talking about some of the difficult aspects that come with these cell phone bans, like in instituting new rules and thus new punishments for kids, and also putting teachers in a place of needing to institute those punishments or police kids in the classroom for yet one more thing. I'm curious if that conversation came up much with teachers that you've talked to, or perhaps in the schools that you interact with in your own life outside of journalism as a parent.
Well, I mean, I think the message I heard from teachers as well as the Vermont NEA is that they don't want to be in the position of having to do this policing, and that's why they feel like a bigger, more broad policy would kind of give them the backup that they need. Also, like, I think what they really were trying to get at, some of the administrators, especially the ones using the Yonder pouches, are like, this is not a punishment. And so, like, we don't want this to be a punitive thing. We ultimately want children, our students, to see this as a gift. And how do we kind of reframe this into, like, this is, we're giving you something back. We're not taking something away, but we're giving you back, you know, your attention span and your, you know, ability to interact with other students face to face and, you know, cope through awkward moments without just picking up your phone. And so I think ultimately that is what they want. They want students themselves to see this as a gift.
A self-motivated thing as well. Dr. Schumacher, do you have anything to add there?
I love that. And I think we think a lot about if in this case a young person has difficulty putting it down, say is a recurrent violator of the policy, whatever it is, I think there's opportunity for schools, again, in partnership with others, including the healthcare space, to wonder with that young person, like, what experience is driving them to be so connected to their phone? What makes it hard to put it down? Thinking about that policy violation as a symptom of a bigger issue that maybe that young person can benefit from support from, as opposed to just defiance.
And are there any maybe early warning signs, is not the exact right phrase here, but any things that parents should maybe be keeping an eye out for that could signal a dependence on phone usage beyond just seeing your kid on their phone all the time? Any issues with behavior or with attention span, things like that?
Sure. I think one of the biggest things we see is sleep challenges. And I know one of the young people mentioned that, you know, turning off the phone at a certain time. But noting that can be hard for young people if all their friends are still continuing that discussion and they're the only one that has to turn it off at 9. So again, continuous exploration about the experience opportunities. But sleep is one thing. I do think crowding out has come up, and Allison mentioned it earlier, this idea of if you give up activities that you used to love or relationships you used to be part of that now no longer seem of interest, I think those are red flags that I would look out for too.
Mm. And Allison, did any of those come up for you in your reporting?
Well, I mean, this just made me think a little bit about this idea, like, when schools take away phones, what are they replacing the phones with? So at Harwood, for example, they talked about, you know, doing more like outdoor walks so kids could just chat with each other, or, you know, introducing decks of cards into the classroom so that when there's kind of a lull in the action or during study hall or something like that, kids have something else to do. I recently read an article about a middle school teacher, I think in California, who brought his old CD player into his classroom and the kids started bringing in like their parents' CDs. So I don't know, just thinking about the other things that, you know, could maybe replace what the phone gave kids or what they thought that the phone was giving them, because I think often it is a false sense of connection you get from, you know, being on your phone, that it's not a really meaningful, rich connection that you have by, you know, doing Snapchat or TikTok, but it does kind of satisfy a need. So figuring out how to replace that with something else.
Mm. Has focusing on this topic made you feel as introspective as I have after talking to those students in Williston? I really felt like they were talking directly to me many times.
Absolutely. And we hear that from young people all the time, yeah. I think they're totally appropriate criticisms of adult-led conversations on this is, but how come the adults aren't reflecting? They're talking to me with their cell phone in their hand. They might use it for different ways, but I think we all can benefit from reflection here.
Mm-hmm. Allison?
Yeah, certainly in my interactions with my own teenagers, I think a lot more about whether I have my phone in my hand or I'm really paying attention to what they're saying. And even like stuff like having the phone by the bed and looking at it in the morning. I definitely think in writing about this topic, I've thought a lot more about my habits. Can't say I've completely changed them, but I do feel like there is more of a desire on my part to do so.
Yeah. Well, let me share a couple more comments from our Instagram post, which I'm now realizing is a little bit ironic to me having a conversation about this topic on social media. But there you go. That's the world we live in today. One person wrote to us and said, I do think that they should be limited in schools. So many of us didn't have them and we don't need them now. One person said that there can be limits in moderation. Only in free periods and after school should students be able to use phones. Another person said, yes, they should be allowed, and parents are the ones who should have the choice about making these rules. And one person said, no, movement, connection, communication skills, and creativity are what need to be prioritized. Well, thank you to everybody who participated in this conversation today. We know we had a lot of different thoughts on different aspects of this story. Allison, is this going to be something that you follow in the future?
Yeah. When I spoke with the schools, I told them, like, I'm going to be calling you up in a couple months to see how these policies are being received and whether they're whether they're finding success. So I plan to do a follow-up.
Mm. And Dr. Schumacher, looking to the future for you, will the American Academy of Pediatrics be involved in some of the conversations that might go on in Montpelier?
I hope so. And as I said, we're at the Vermont Child Health Improvement Program working with primary care practices all around the state to really build skills, confidence to engage with families on this in the healthcare setting too. So we look forward to continued partnership.
Dr. Heidi Schumacher is a UVM pediatrician. Dr. Schumacher, thank you so much for your expertise.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we are also joined by Allison Novak, education reporter with 7 Days.
Thank you.